Hello, and welcome to the Strength to Be Human podcast with your host, author and playwright Mark Anthony Rossi. This show explores all forms of creativity for those searching for meaning and a place in the world. To err is human, but so is to love. Now, without further ado, here's your host.
Episode 6, The Artist and Relationships. All right, this is not going to be a saucy, salacious type of program, but it's important to mention to everyone that relationships are, I feel, very vital to an artist's life. So we're going to discuss here in this program the four different categories for relationships. One is for the arts, second one for artists, third one for the family, and the last one is for significant others. All right, let's go right into it. The first one is the arts. Unbeknownst maybe to you, or maybe you just haven't really considered this seriously, but every time you're putting aside time, you're putting together a plan or a program or a schedule to write something, to sing something, to create something, you are developing a relationship. Your relationship to your talent, to your creativity, to your dream, to your muse. There's many ways to call this, but ultimately what's happening is you're developing a relationship. And like any relationships in any of these categories, what you put in is often what you're going to be getting out of it. So you really can't be disappointed or complain if you're not putting enough time, let's say, into your writing. And time, I mean, just not the time to sit down to create something. There's also the time that's necessary for the editing, for the rewriting, maybe for someone else to proofread it, maybe for someone else to give you another viewpoint on something you might feel is not clear or terribly complex or just not on the angle that you want it to be. All of that takes time. And all relationships need a good measure of time if they're gonna bear any fruit, if they're gonna be anything that's gonna be worth what you're doing at that moment. You have to put in the time, like anything else in life. I think sometimes folks forget that because they don't mean to, but oftentimes they simply belittle what they're trying to do. Oh, it's just a poem. Well, if you're a poet, it's not just a poem. It's a critical piece of what you're trying to create. Maybe an important message or an important observation or just an important statement that you want to get out there to the world that maybe you hasn't been done before. Or maybe you just haven't done it before. But it is important. And therefore, you're creating a relationship. So it's really important to keep in mind that it's necessary, like any relationship, to take it seriously, to give it time, to give it attention, to understand that oftentimes it's not the big things that are important in relationships, but usually the small things. And in writing, it's really no different. The big things are, you know, you're using proper diction, or are you spelling these words correctly? Does your punctuation make sense? Does your title really bring somebody into the table to check it out? Those are the big things you're supposed to be doing anyway as an artist. The small things are really about, does it really meet the same muster it meant yesterday? Meaning that you have new eyes the next day. Look at it. Just don't suddenly send it out there. Yeah, I did 2 hours on this and now I'm ready to go. And then you wonder why it'll get rejected. Or you wonder why someone doesn't have the most favorable opinion. You got to put the time in to also reevaluate what you've done. You'll find in many instances on Thursday it was different than what it was on Wednesday. And then maybe you have to make some changes. And those changes oftentimes make it better, make it stronger. As a person, I'm not always the biggest proponent of change. Sometimes change, especially in my personal life, it's a pain. Oh, I got to learn something new. I got to do something new. Oh, I got to go to the next grade with my sons. And and learn new teachers and new rhythms and new ideas. And it can be a struggle and an education in itself. So sometimes change is not always super welcome. But when it comes to writing, I seem to welcome it because I know, maybe just because I know my own style of writing or my own way of doing things, but I know that what I did on Tuesday could be better on Wednesday and could even be better on Thursday. I know that a couple of days of really looking into it, seeing what else can be done, improves it. And then when I put it out there, I feel pretty confident that, you know, I'm going to get a hit. Someone's going to like it too, and it's going to get published out there, and folks are going to read it. So I find it very, very important to keep in mind that relationship to that piece and to the creativity behind it is the only thing that's going to really propel the work, yourself, and maybe even how you view the next week, the next month, the next year, if it's something you still want to do. Because guess what? Just as much as all relationships require that time, those small things to make them healthy, to make them happen, to make them continue, well, it's also a sacrifice for something else. Just keep that in mind. Every time you're doing something that's worthy, that's time worthy, that's productive and useful, it means that something else is being sacrificed. Whether that's sleep, or you could have went to a movie, but now you decide to go on a 2-hour walk with your significant other, or you decide to lock yourself in the closet and, you know, redo that essay. Whatever you're doing is taken from something else. And I don't mean that in a negative way. It's just a factual way of how you have to look at something, so you don't get yourself caught by surprise. Hey, why is this person upset with me? And we'll get into those other categories. Don't get me wrong. It's just sort of a preview of how this works. When you're doing something, no matter how worthy it is, it does take from something else, especially when you have a more involved life like many of us do. You know, we often have full-time jobs or maybe part-time jobs. You know, we're parents, and we're lovers, and in some cases we're activists and fighters and protesters for certain things. But we have other things that are going on in our life, and it's not possible in a 24-hour period and still get some decent sleep to concentrate on all of them simultaneously. It's all about a priority, and it's all about a schedule. I don't mean that to sound robotic or corporate, but those are just the facts. You literally have to pencil in things if you have lots of things going on and they all happen to be important to you. I know that's pretty much how I live my life. I mean, I've had folks ask me, how can you be so prolific? How can you do the editing of a online international literary journal, the Aerial Chart? And how can you do poetry and fiction and plays and help other people with book reviews and help publish some people's books and now do a podcast and still work and still have a family and two small boys and do all of that and have it not fall apart? Well, a couple of things. Maybe this will help you, or maybe this illustrates you the passion you need to have to get things done. Is I want all of that, so I don't have a complaint. Oh, I got too much on my table. Believe me, if I thought I had too much on my table, I'd just cut things out that I didn't think was important. But because I think it's all important, well, guess what? Things have to get sacrificed sometimes. Sometimes it's time for sleep. Sometimes I got to cut into that. You know, sometimes I'm not having the kind of worthy or productive lunch I'd like because maybe I'm over there checking out somebody's stuff to proofread, or maybe I'm proofreading my own stuff, or maybe I'm writing down some notes. But I use that phone and those notes things on a regular basis. And I don't want to sound too creepy, but if I'm in the bathroom for a while, you know, and I'm sitting down, oh, well, hey, that's not a bad time to jot down a couple of notes and do a few things. Time management is extremely important, not only in a person's life, but especially in the arts, because you're going to have other forces in your life, and they're not going to understand. They're going to be, poking in there. Hey, what about me? Why are you doing that? Can't you do that later? You know, et cetera, et cetera. And this is not to say that they are wrong or they are unfair, because they might feel that way sometimes, because they're not. You're important to them, important to their lives, and important to their time as well. So how you balance it and how you manage it is really critical. Otherwise, you start bringing yourself stress and other emotional baggage that you don't need. You really can't go, I feel anyway, you really can't go into the arts, you know, full of all this, residual guilt. And I don't mean guilt of the past or traumatic events that you're still working through. Don't get me wrong. That carries into arts many times. Some people even use that in the most positive way they can to try to work through it like a therapy session. And that's fine. The kind of guilt I'm talking about is just the daily stuff about, I put aside that garbage for a little while to throw out until later because I want to go work on something that just came up that I just feel like I got the, I got the edge on. I got that mojo on it. Or, I'll shorten this dinner with the family because I need to go run and go look at this or something like that. That's the kind of guilt that those regular daily things that sometimes it happens. We're not perfect, and I'm not asking anyone to be perfect. And quite frankly, I'm not trying to be perfect. I don't even put any energy into it. I think it's a silly preoccupation that folks do. It makes them more stressful, and it makes them less productive than they realize. Trying to be perfect, trying to be everything to everybody. You can't. You have to be who you are first. And if you're not, you're going to find out that many things suffer in relationships. The writing, your contact with other artists, how you deal with your family, or maybe even how they deal with you. And of course, the significant other who's really watching oftentimes. So you got to keep that in mind, that it's important just to be honest with yourself and figure out what the priorities are. Now, when I say priorities, I'm not really talking about the priorities of the big picture of life, Oh, at first it's my family, then it's my art, and then I'll talk to other people or friends, and then maybe I'll watch a movie and listen to a song. Nothing like that. I'm just talking about that priorities, they can shift. They can shift a daily or weekly or monthly based on what's going on. It's real important. If I got a situation where, my kids got some big exams coming up for school, one's in elementary and one's in middle school, so I'm not talking about college here, but still, I want to make myself more available. They're going to need that emotional support. They might even need some reviews, some drills, some exercises and stuff. So guess what? On that week or two, then maybe the writing is, priority number three or four or something. Maybe it's down on the list there. And this is more important. And there's other times where it's like, hey, nothing super duper is going on over here. This is the time to make the writing happen. Let's go over and do something. And you can always do something in the arts to maintain this relationship. It doesn't always have to be the number one priority because there's always something for you to do. You don't have to have the pressure of, I got to create something new. Well, I'm not an artist anymore. I haven't written anything new since last week. That's the wrong way of approaching things. There's always something to do. You could be re-editing something, looking at something else, looking at something older. Hey, can I change this? Can I make this more fresher? Can I make it maybe something that I feel even stronger about? There's always something you can do. And when you do that, you'll find many times that can inspire you in itself for something else. Hey, I'm thinking about that thought, and now I'm feeling closer to it just because you're doing the work itself. So there's no such thing as, I'm not making progress because I'm working on something that I did 3 months ago. As long as you're working on something artistic, you're keeping that relationship healthy and strong. It's all about your attitude to it. All right, let's go on to the next phase of this, and that is your relationship to artists. Now, I'm not trying to be controversial, but at this point, if you haven't realized it by now, I'm going to be direct. That's just who I am, and that's how I like to do things. And quite frankly, when it comes to other artists, that can be a lot of problems for a lot of artists, mainly because they're not always communicating as they should. I find it's an incredible irony and sometimes even a tragedy that some of the most productive and interesting artists don't know how to really communicate with other artists. They could do some great work and you read it and go, wow, this is great. And you try to have an email or a text or a phone conversation with them. And they sound like they just want to go to a baseball game, or this is not that important anymore. I'm not insisting or suggesting that your relationship to other artists even needs to exist. If you don't want to, then you don't want to. But what I do say is that I find, and I found it myself too, that that connection, even if it's just an email, even if this is an occasional Facebook thing, still is useful. It's nice to know what's going on. It's nice for them to know what you're doing. Kind of all kind of gives people a heads up on things. Maybe even puts you on a better artistic edge. You might be having a dreary day or a rough week, and just a shout out from somebody or hey, how you doing? It is going to inspire you. It could get you out of a block. It could get you out of a rut. It can just get you out of that whole funk of I'm not really feeling like I'm doing anything useful. Reading somebody else's stuff, talking to them a little bit. Even if it's not just necessarily about writing. Hey, how's the kids going? What's going on? Hope your husband's feeling better. Sorry about your grandmother dying last week. You know, all of that. I think it's really important that if you can maintain some kind of regular and decent relationship with other artists, that it helps you. It helps you as a person. It helps you as an artist. It's not like you need to have a thousand outreaches out there, but a couple, especially if they might see your artistic viewpoint in them and vice versa, you might have some real commonalities. Why not? There's nothing wrong with it. But I'm always shocked. I wish I wouldn't be shocked, but I'm always shocked on how so many folks just don't think that's important in their lives or don't want to reach out. You know, they don't want to share any market information unless it's something they got published and they're like, oh, I got to let people know now. Well, you don't have to let anybody know anything if you don't want to, but I find it is healthy and it's a useful exchange on all these things. Hey, I think this editor is great. Hey, I think this magazine is wonderful. Hey, I'm going into haiku this month. Just a whole month of haiku. Just want to just try it out and see how where it leads and what it brings to me. Maybe it can get certain things out of me. I mean, because there is a real truth to certain forms of art or writing might only get out certain things out of a person. Like a person might say, man, I want to get this out, but this essay is just not doing it. They might even say, this fiction piece is not doing it for me. They could say, you know, this free verse poem, it's just not happening. And then go into haiku or something really different. And then like, wow, that really did it for me. That got exactly what I wanted to get across. So sometimes different forms help you to get out different messages. And you won't just know that right away. You might only learn that when you talk to somebody. Hey, Jim, why'd you do 25 haikus this month, and I noticed you're trying to get those out there. You got a few published. I haven't noticed you doing that before. What's going on with that? You know, they'll be happy to tell you. It's not some national secret, and I find most people will respond really well if you just simply ask a question. You know, obviously, politely, you're not trying to intrude, and you'll find most people have some interesting answers, something they might have used, realizing that certain forms just work better with certain situations that you're dealing with. Now, there's no real roadmap to it, okay? I'm not going to be able to give you some agenda that I can email to you. Yeah, when you're moody, try haiku number 4. And when you're feeling great, let's just do an essay. It doesn't really work that way. It's something you have to feel and sense internally yourself. It really isn't. I agree, though, that most haikus tend to be nature-oriented, tend to be kind of full of some kind of a wisdom, tend to be more happy, snappy type things. I really haven't seen too many of them that are like dark or dreary or anything. And actually, I wouldn't mind seeing a few. This would be kind of a neat change of pace. I don't believe that the form can't handle that, but I don't really see a lot of that. It almost seems like the form wants people to do something that's more upbeat, more uplifting, and that's fine. I mean, I don't think the form is made one way or the other, but that's how people seem to use it. Maybe that's the thing that they use the most for that, and that's fine. I like the idea, though, of forms helping us to facilitate that connection that we have, that we seem to not be able to get into other areas and other genres. Number 3 here I'm going into is the relationship with family. Always a difficult one, I'd say at times, mainly because most families, and I'm not trying to make a big generalized statement or some stereotype, it's just my experience and also the experience I hear from plenty of other people. It's a topic that I hear a lot, that's talked about a lot. I could probably do a whole show on it. But I find more than not, in my experience and other people's experiences, that they have issues with that. They don't have the kind of support mechanism that you think that a person would get. You know, they get, why are you doing that? That's not really serious. You can't make income that way. Nobody cares about that anymore. I'm not saying on this show here that I have a 100 excellent responses or answers for you. But what I will say is this. If you take that seriously, your days of your being an artist, they'll be over soon. It's just that simple. Because once you buy into that, what I feel is nonsense, you're pretty much done. You know, you can ask them without having a real debate, without having a negative retort, without having an argument even. You can just simply add the facts in there, really. So what's so relevant, huh? Smoking 16 cigarettes, 10 beers, and watching 150 hours of Netflix? That's more interesting and exciting. That's really an excellent use of your time rather than trying to create something new. Because last I checked, on TV, cable, and television, that lots of new things aren't coming out. It's rehashes of the same stuff we've seen over and over again. Sometimes even with the same title, just rebought and repackaged. I don't know if Hollywood is running out of ideas, but I think they're in that neighborhood. So why are you going to criticize someone who's trying to create something new and interesting? It doesn't matter if they're not going to make $1 million of it. It doesn't even matter if they can make an income of it. No one says they still can't do it. It's something important for them, something important possibly for the world even. So continue with it. That's what I say, and that's what pretty much would be my answer would be, because it makes no sense to me to tell somebody, you know, they shouldn't create just because it doesn't fit and what somebody thinks a lifestyle is supposed to be or a occupation is supposed to be. No one says you can't do that seriously on the side. No one says you can't do it in other elements like being a teacher or, you know, or an instructor or a different form of art that maybe would have a more consistent income. I mean, I know some people who sing, but they also have a job in the studio mixing things and helping other folks and make an income that way, but they also sing. Maybe they'll get a break one day. They don't know, but that's the whole point of art, is you're taking a chance. And I think it's the chance, or if you might want to call it the risk, that scares other people the most. And that's sad, because then sometimes that it gets internalized by the artist. Because, you know, they're already facing those same things. We all are. I've been writing 36 years. You don't think any of that stuff doesn't cross my mind? Of course it does. It does to everyone every day who deals with this. Just as much excitement as that first poem that got published for me in 1984 is something that just got picked up the other day. You get that same feeling. Feeling of elation. Feeling of celebration. Feeling of validation. I'm not trying to rhyme here, but that kind of worked out. You get it. It doesn't feel any different than you did 30-something years ago. It doesn't. Just like the rejections can just as much sting or hurt as they did years ago. Just because you've done it and you've heard it and you've seen it before doesn't mean that it doesn't feel any less painful or any less joyous. Because that's all the truth. But that's the risk involved in that. And we know about it because we deal with it every day. So I think it's extra painful for people when they're hearing it from family members. People that, you know, they might love and they might just respect. And then on this angle, the angle, they're like, well, I just got to disassociate myself from that. I've had some people that literally told me, you know, some families have this ban on politics or this ban on religion. It's a way for them to simply just operate as people and love each other and support each other and go about business. And then on those other things, you know, they'll go forth with their friends or their other extended family or just personally themselves without the family connection. Well, some folks do that with the arts too. Hey, Mom, I don't mind talking about my love life, and I'll tell you all about this TV show I think about, and I got to go see some play the other day, and, you know, Jimmy is acting a little weird, but he's not a bad guy. But we're not going to talk about the arts. We're not going to talk about the things that I deal with, because if you can't, even make an honest attempt to understand, then it's only going to be a strange mystery to you, a rolling of your eyes, maybe even a smart-aleck comment, and you just don't need that, even from people that you love. So keep that in mind. It's an important, not only a defense mechanism, it's just an important natural way that you should go about things, in my humble opinion. Because if you don't, you're taking all these shots from people that help raise you, put food on the table for you, clothes on your back, roof over your head. You don't want to be disrespectful, even if they are. Because, you know, all those other things, they've come true. Maybe they just can't do on this one. Maybe it'll happen one day. Well, just face it, maybe it might never happen. They might never understand. You know? Yeah, that's my daughter, Alice, over there. And, you know, she's a legal secretary by day. And then at night, she's just plotting away at plays. I told her it's a waste of time, but blah, blah, blah. That's literally what they might be saying to their friends about you. I know it's hurtful and painful to hear. I don't even like saying it. I really don't. But it's important that we learn to address that. I was speaking to I guess I would call him a writing coach. I was speaking to him the other day, and I was saying some of these same things in a nutshell. We were texting, and so I guess when I'm speaking, it's more like chatting or texting, but I use the same word for everything. To me, it's all communication. But he was mentioning the interesting, and I can't wait to have him as an interview on the show when we go into the interview stages. But he mentioned that what he tries to do in the writing coaching element for him was he tries to already do his best to inoculate them, to vaccinate them against, you know, the fear and the feelings and the trauma of rejection. So this way, when it comes, they don't take it lightly, but it's not something that's knocking them down to the ground for 3-4 days either. You know, you got to take the blow, boof, and then you go on ahead. It's kind of like boxing. You can't be in an hour there with somebody constantly throwing punches back and forth, and, you know, two or three he hits you on and you're hurt. You got like another 25 minutes left in that fight. You're about to be done then. You got to be able to take the blows, acknowledge that they hurt, do what you can to minimize the next time, and go over there and knock some out yourself. And I don't mean the blows that you're going to be delivering or some big critical things like, hey, you know, at least I read books, or hey, why don't you try to do something creative and see how wonderful or how difficult it can be. I don't mean that. I just mean the blows of you're putting another poem out there, even though everybody says you shouldn't do that, or, you know, you're looking into this essay and you want to try to get it published in a big magazine. You think it has something worthy, and it can make a statement and it can stand on its own. Those are the kind of blows, because remember, in many ways, your success is not just another bit of confidence for you to move forward as an artist. In a weird kind of way, it's almost like a revenge vehicle too for all those people that said that you shouldn't do it, that you're no good. You know, for the longest time, I mean, I stopped doing this now for a lot of years, but for the longest time when I began writing, and as I was going into Germany and serving in the Air Force, that's how I used to be able to protect myself from some of the negative commentary I get and rejections. I would just say to myself, okay, I'm going to put you over here on this wall. Well, I don't mind telling you, but that wall got a little big for a while there. There must have been like 20 notes up there. But I'm going to put you on this wall, and when I have this success, I'm going to put that success right in front of you. I'm going to laugh about, ha, 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 this person thinks I'm really good. This person thinks this poem is worthy. I don't know what's wrong with you folks. And then once I did that, I took all those things down, almost like I was challenging, you know, in a metaphysical way, just in my own personal emotional way. But I did that for a while. It sounds corny. It might even sound a little weak at times. But quite frankly, when I began, I was far, far from home in complete foreign land. You know, I had to bring a gun to my own apartment because of terrorism. I used to have to roll out a mirror with little wheels underneath my car to make sure there wasn't a bomb in there before I started the car. I mean, those are the kind of days we had. And this was in the 80s, before the real nasty terrorism that started attacking America had happened. But still, it was out there, especially in Europe, and a lot of it was targeted in the military forces. But in some instances, sometimes they were targeted with our partners on the base, like our Canadian partners and our British ones. Really, especially the British ones. with the IRA and all that stuff that was going on. You know, you could be part of that for not realizing it. They could get you by mistake. They could get you by accident. Scary and interesting times. But nevertheless, that's what I did. I don't know if you'll find it effective or any kind of useful advice. And I don't know if I'm just simply relaying a story to you. But I'm telling you, for me, it worked. And it worked like a charm. And just like anything that works, it doesn't mean that it needs to be done forever. Anything you do too much, never a good idea. So that's why sometimes change is helpful, just because it kind of gets you back into a different routine so you don't get all stale and everything. I mean, because I really don't feel like it was necessary. I really didn't want to just sit there and talk to the wall, literally, you know, day in and day out. You know, and of course, you know, you have a, you know, girlfriend come over, you have a little party with a bunch of the you know, Air Force guys and everything. You got to suddenly rip this down and put it away because people are like, what in the hell is this? And rightfully so. There's a lot of explanation to do when you're having some drinks and some cigarettes. Well, yeah, I'm trying to show that these six editors who say I stink, I'm trying to show them that I don't stink, because this one, number seven, says this is a great poem. This is one heck of an essay, or I like how astute you were on here, or how interesting you were on there. Unless they're creating it, then I'm really going to understand. They're going to probably just think you've been getting out a lot. You're a little too cooped up, which is incredibly the opposite, because just like the life I have now with the family and a career and podcasting and all the various facets of writing that I've grown into over the years, I had to do the same thing. I had to fight to have the time to go out there because, you know, I'm serving in the military. Sometimes the hours are long, especially if you have chemical warfare exercises, it gets even longer. I'm flying out to different countries when I have temporary duty assignments. I'm going to college over there to get my degree on the base. You know, I'm traveling because as long as I'm there, you want to see things. You don't want to say, I lived in Germany for 5 years and went to two places. I mean, some people did that. They just didn't care. And that's fine. But I wasn't one of those. I'm like, who knows when I'm going to come back on my own dime. Let's rock and roll and go cons to different places. And that's what I did. And then amongst all of that, I'm putting in concerts, jamming out with the guys, checking out some shows, dating girls, of course. And then on top of all of that, trying to fit the writing in. So I got a lot done, don't get me wrong. But again, it's a real sacrifice of sleep, I'm telling you. Nothing like I do now. I mean, I had days where I didn't sleep for like 2 days, sometimes 3 days. On the average day, I think I had like 3 hours sleep, maybe 2 hours, literally running around, doing all kinds of things. So my day could be military, school, possibly meet up with a girl for dinner or a date, come back home, get some writing done, go to bed for a couple hours, and do the whole thing over again. I mean, I literally had days where I actually, if I wasn't going out to dinner with a girl, I might have actually forgotten to eat some of that day or maybe all of that day. I'm telling you, I've had a few nights where I'm like, you know, I can't sit here and write because I'm starving to death. And I go down to the local Gasthaus, which is the German word for like a bar. A lot of them bars serve some kind of food. So I go over there, hey, how you doing there? Let me have a couple of drinks over here and, you know, go give me some sandwiches or something. Or one guy, he'd just have a brooch, which is a kind of like a German roll with some cheese in it, and I'll eat that. I mean, literally, I'd have a cheese roll and about three brandies, and that was my day for like eating and drinking. It's amazing. It was so long ago, but I remember it like it was yesterday. But I would try to fit something in there. If it's a couple of notes right at the bar over there, or, you know, sometimes I just have a conversation with him. I just couldn't do anything. I come back later on, even get less sleep to try to do something. But that's what you have to do. You have to force things to happen, you know, because you have to make it a priority in your life, depending on that day. Another and the last a real example is your relationship with spouses or significant others. It's the most difficult at times, because that person, more than anybody else, is with you and is noticing you and can feel the impact of when you spend time with them and when you don't. So getting a proper balance, I don't even know what to tell you about to get a proper balance. You're going to have some good days and bad days like anybody that has a relationship or a marriage. You just try to stay cognizant as much as you can, but you're not always going to make that person happy. you're not always going to be happy. And you're not always going to be able to get to the writing, because sometimes that is the sacrifice. Like I was mentioning throughout most of this program, you're sacrificing other things to get to the art. Well, when it comes to a relationship to somebody that you really value in your life, well, sometimes your writing has to be a sacrifice. That night, that day, that week, whatever. It might just have to be. And you live with that. Maybe, you know, you get a few moments to yourself quickly, throw some notes in your phone, or something interesting, recurring theme comes up. You try to jot it down someplace so you can get to it, you know, at another time. Because you know it's going to be at another time, and that's all you can do. You just have to learn as a human being to not regret that, not cause that to be some kind of resentment. Just let it be natural and organic that, hey, I can't do this writing if I got somebody angry at me all the time, or I can't do this thing that I love so much, you know, if I got the kids in the whole world and the cat looking at me like, well, I haven't fed him in 2 days and all that. that's not going to work. So you still have your roles to play in other areas of your life, and you need to play them. And play them in as honest as you can. Maybe sometimes you know, something's so pressing you got to bail for a moment to get it done. Go ahead, throw it down, write it down, and then go about your business. Nothing wrong with doing that. Ask permission. Be honest. Hey, I got this thought. I just need to jot it down quickly, and then we can go resume everything. I know it sounds strange. You're not going to see it on some TV show, and, you know, I doubt Dr. Phil is going to mention it, but that's who we are as artists, and we got to keep that in mind. If we love that person, well, we also love being an artist. We also love our art. You know, they can be compatible. Yes, they can coexist. Yes, they can even be in the same room. But you can't always give your full attention to both of them simultaneously. It's not normally possible. So you have to make some choices. There can be an hourly choice or a daily choice or a monthly choice or however you feel. You can make it happen and you can make it work. That's what you have to do. But there are choices involved. You'll note, if you know anything about the back stories of famous artists or even artists that are not famous, you know, a lot of them tell you all kinds of problems. I mean, Kafka was really very blunt about it. One of the few artists that was really blunt about, listen, man, I love this art writing, but I hate this job that I'm in. It's made me hate the relationship I'm in with my spouse, and I'm kind of miserable there. I'm only not miserable when I do this writing. He was one of the few to really come out and say that, and that was actually a pretty rough and controversial thing to say back then, because, you know, back then you're supposed to only love your family and be dutiful to your job, and because, you know, they didn't think anything of writing in that sort of fashion. So, you know, he's probably committing like 20,000 social sins a minute. And he was like upfront about it. And it obviously gave him a lot of torment and a lot of emotional baggage and maybe even some psychological trauma from all of that. But he said that. You had a lot of writers and artists, Picasso, another one, all kinds of difficulties with women. Some of them because they wanted to be with him because he was famous and had money. And he took advantage of that. Others, he took advantage of them just because they were young and he was more of a emotionally mature person. Maybe that's a little questionable on the emotional maturity part. but he was definitely a man of enormous complexity. And I know he moaned and groaned a lot about those things, about people not being grateful, about folks taking from his time, and some of those people involved, you know, what are you, painting again? Come on now, huh? Let's go out and go take a walk in the park. No, I got to get this done. So there's a guy that not always found the greatest balance. Got a lot of work done, but amazingly enough, had many of those same issues, if all of us do. And I think he was a little bit more confessional about that as well. And he had some interesting things to say about it. Edgar Allan Poe, there's somebody that had some serious problems in their personal life. The women that he loved kept dying on him. All of tuberculosis. Incredibly enough, something that even at an advanced age, you can cure with a serious amount of antibiotics. Most people don't die of tuberculosis in the year 2019. I don't think they've really died of that in probably, I don't know, 75 years or something. But nevertheless, that kept happening to him. Imagine what that does to you and your state of mind. and how you have to operate as a writer. But he is another person that had a lot of issues with that, and I think more so than other artists, he didn't really have too many confessors that he could talk to about that. That's the guy that really isolated himself from a lot of people. As much as he was writing reviews of other writing and checking out other people's stuff and getting his own stuff out there, he really didn't have a lot of confessors other than those women that he loved, which I think it made it extra painful for him when they died, because they were everything. You know, in terms of the women he married, obviously they were literally mother figures and lovers and partial editors and feedback people and proofreaders and all kinds of stuff. I mean, they were everything to him, literally, because he just didn't really get along with other folks. But we could tell from some of his writings that that had an impact, the death and the blood. I mean, you can easily say, without having to get too over-analytical, that his short fiction piece, The Mask of the Red Death, is particularly about tuberculosis and how that blood comes out of your mouth as your lungs are fracturing from it until you ultimately die. So blood and red, big part of that man's life and how it scarred him. It's unfortunate he died so early. Who knows what other great works he could have done or who else he could have become. Maybe he would have finally found someone who didn't die of that and brought him some measure of peace or happiness. We don't know. You know, he died in many ways the same way he came into the world. A very peculiar, almost mysterious, tragic, and ultimately sad way to go. But he left us an incredible artistic and intellectual legacy. And you can see from work like that how important understanding those relationships are and how they really relate to our own art.
Thank you for listening. Please follow the show and visit our blog at strengthtobehuman.blogspot.com.